This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gregory Copley of Defense and Foreign Affairs, guiding me over this last year and more, the trouble in the Nile River Valley all the way to the Red Sea. Ethiopia has been in constant disorder and civil war for some years, having to do with the wars of the 20th century lingering into the 21st. But now the whole question of the Nile River Valley is at odds because of a collapse of government in Sudan. The news from Khartoum, Reuters reporting, a U.S. diplomatic convoy came under fire in Sudan in an apparent attack by fighters linked to the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, according to U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. The secretary called the incident reckless and irresponsible. At this point, the reporting does not include any casualties among the Americans in the convoy. But the fighting between Sudan's army, led by the general in charge, and the Rapid Forces, led by a man named Dagalo, the Special Forces, I guess you'd think of them, and the army is led by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, is recent, and it includes airstrikes against Khartoum. Right now, Reuters, the best they can do, given the chaos, says 185 people dead, 1,800 injured, according to the UN account. Of course, that's moving all the time. Gregory, Sudan, if I recall my lessons correctly, Sudan was used by Egypt as a surrogate to challenge and disrupt Ethiopia over the large dam that Ethiopia needs for energy. And Sudan did not disfavor this, but I lost track of the Sudanese government because Ethiopia is now calm and at peace. Prime Minister Abiy is clearly in charge in Addis Ababa. The disruptions of the last year have receded back into the troublemaking in certain regions, but Sudan is now falling apart. I don't want to blame Egypt, but I do want to say right now this looks like the military has been heavily armed, so much so that two elements of the military, the army chief and the paramilitaries, now can fight it out gun to gun. Is that accurate? Thank you.
Yes, it is accurate, but I'd be a little more cautious on describing the situation in Ethiopia as having stabilized. I think we've seen some fairly scary turns in that conflict, which we can get to in a minute. But what we're seeing in Sudan itself is a situation where, although the military government of then President and General Omar al-Bashir was overthrown in 2019, putting Lieutenant General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan in the driver's seat. We knew that this was not a done deal. It wasn't settled. It wasn't the transition to democracy which the overthrow of al-Bashir promised, and the Janjaweed militia, the Rapid Support Force group, was always going to be vying for power, even though the leaders of that and the former military were working together to control the government. Now, what we had seen with the Ethiopian government under General al-Burhan, it was that they had settled their issues.
The Sudanese government you're speaking of.
Yeah, the Sudanese government had settled their issues with Ethiopia. They no longer were going to attack Ethiopia at the behest of Cairo, because General al-Burhan knew that the dam was there to provide hydroelectric power to Sudan, and this was critical. So that had been resolved. The Egyptians still maintain forces in Sudan, and it's interesting that the Rapid Support Force, with its own fighter aircraft, attacked a base at Merowe with Egyptian Air Force MiG-29s and destroyed at least one of them. So the Egyptians are clearly not happy. The Americans are clearly not happy. We still don't know who is funding either General al-Burhan or the Janjaweed militia opposing them. So it's clear, though, that the insurgency or the insurrection is fairly delicately based, And they are going to have to fight for their lives, which means that this is going to be a fairly intense, desperate, and bloody situation for the coming few weeks or months. And it's really surprising that only 185 people have been reported to have been killed so far, because this is going to get messy. But it is between the two military organizations rather than involving the civilian sector, which had been largely responsible through protests of overthrowing the former military government in 2019.
It appears from the reporting, Gregory, that the government in Khartoum has either collapsed or is in hiding. And at the same time, the people of Khartoum are vulnerable to this civil war fought between the military organizations. But I remind myself that ungoverned space is the opportunity for really bad actors. If I recall correctly, Sudan was the first stop of a man named bin Laden once upon a time when he left Afghanistan after working with the U.S. to overthrow elements of the Russian invasion of Afghanistan. He went first to Khartoum before he traveled on back to Afghanistan to take up residence either in Kabul or other cities. So Khartoum has long been a favorite or a sentimental favorite of the jihad. Does the jihad have connection to this, or are we looking at generals? They're posing with riding crops. It's all very 19th century. Or is al-Qaeda somewhere in the background?
Well, I think al-Qaeda and ISIS have been, or Daesh have been involved there. They've been using Sudan as a transit space to get weapons and support down to their various groups. In Chad, in Nigeria, Niger, and so on. So there's been a pretty free access there. But we have to say that since General Al-Burhan basically had another mini coup in October 25th, 2021, he has been very supportive, if you like, of a moderate approach, including supporting the Abraham Accords, which brought peace with Israel and the like. So basically, we're disrupting a fairly positive trend in Sudan, if you can call it that, under this military leadership. So, as you say, the ungoverned spaces are going to be the problem. And I think what we have to be concerned about is whether this whole thing is going to start to eventually affect Egypt, which is going through its own pressures because of its economic difficulties at this stage. The military has been looking for ways to divert attention from the internal problems, and that's why they were blaming Ethiopia for the water shortage rather than blaming the civilian population itself, because that's quadrupled in size in the past few decades. And that's what's caused the water shortage. There's too many people for the water supply. So Egypt itself, I think, is not going to be positively benefiting from this unrest, and we could see it spill over into Egypt as well.
Let's go to Ethiopia, Addis Ababa, because a recent high point was the visit of the new Prime Minister of Italy, Giorgia Meloni, to Prime Minister Abe, and from appearances at the photograph and the way Reuters wrote it up, these were moments in which both reflected on the abuse of Ethiopia by Italy in the 20th century, the dictator period. However, it looked very positive, but you tell me that Ethiopia is not stable at this point. Last time we talked about it, the Tigray Popular Liberation Front was turning in its weapons. Has that solved that particular problem?
Well, to a degree, the TPLF, the Tigray Popular Liberation Front, has turned in some of its small arms, but they have paused that process because they've been given a breathing space, and they haven't turned in all their heavy weapons. Not that there are many of those left, but the real problem is that now that that problem was under control, the Oromo movements, to an extent supported by the government, have been attempting to disarm and take over disband the militia from the neighboring Amhara region. And it's the Amhara people and their neighbors, the Afar people, who are largely Somali people, they've been the subject of incredible genocidal depredations by the Oromo Liberation Front and by the TPLF, the Tigray Popular Liberation Front, as well. So that problem is getting out of hand, and many Ethiopian nationalists, people who want to see the whole country kept together, as well as the Amhara people, are starting to back up against Prime Minister Abiy because he is not protecting the Amhara people. The Amhara people, strangely enough, have developed a special relationship with the Eritrean government and the Eritrean military. Of course, the Eritreans became independent with the breakup of Ethiopia after the collapse of the Derg in 1990-91. But the Eritreans are supporting the Amhara in their attempts to retain their control of their regional militia in order to stop them being overrun by the Oromo and Tigrayan people. So it's a messy situation. The visit by Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni on the 14th and 15th of April has been very significant. This is following up on some initiatives which we'd made to the previous Italian government, where the Italian defense minister had indicated that he wanted to see a formal apology by the Italian government for the atrocities committed by the Italians in the 1935-1941 period. And bearing in mind that it was the defeat of the Italians in 1941 at the Battle of Gondar in Ethiopia that gave the Allies their first victory of World War II. This was a major defeat. It was the first time Axis forces had been driven out of territory they'd conquered. And that was really the turning point of World War II. It was overshadowed a couple of weeks later, because this was late November 1941. It was overshadowed then by the Japanese invasion attack on Pearl Harbor. So we've seen this great victory of Gondar, ending the five-year Italian occupation, reaffirming the rule of Emperor Haile Selassie and the Italian and the Ethiopian nationalists, really transforming the region, transforming World War II. And Giorgia Meloni's visit starts the healing process after all these years, after 82 years. So this was a profoundly important visit. The question is whether Prime Minister Meloni can get on with Prime Minister Abiy and get Abiy to do what he promised to do, which was to revise the communist constitution of Ethiopia and restore the 1955 constitution of Haile Selassie, which was very much a free market democratic constitution.
Quickly, the U.S., the firing on the convoy in Khartoum, protested by the Secretary of State. If I recall correctly, the State Department backed the disorder in Ethiopia when the TPLF was advancing on the Addis Ababa capital, and Prime Minister Abiy in uniform led his forces to push them back. We now have, as you just said, the present circumstances more promising than those days. However, the question is, has the U.S. reorganized itself, and is it now in communication with Prime Minister Abiy? Has the U.S. State Department acknowledged that it picked a losing side of disruptors picking the TPLF?
Well, the State Department is never going to admit that it backed the wrong horse, but it is talking to Prime Minister Abiy, no question about it. But it's been urging him to give the relief to the TPLF, which had surrendered unconditionally to the government. But the TPLF and the State Department have a long relationship, which started with the Obama administration, which transferred large amounts of money to the TPLF in exchange for U.S. use of bases in Ethiopia.
In other words, never apologize, never explain. I understand. Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. The situation in Sudan is dynamic and completely fallen apart. The photographs from Reuters show smoke rising over Khartoum after an airstrike by the Rapid Support Forces. The army is now fighting its own paramilitary. We cannot look for clarity in Sudan for some time. the Nile River Valley is now at risk. We're going to my favorite part of the week, King Charles Report. And at a restaurant in London I knew nothing of until I saw it featured in the Financial Times, Gregory will introduce us to Wilton's, a favorite of Regents for many, many decades, centuries even, and of King Charles. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.